Good evening. I am Hank Jones, and you're listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio. We can be found at blogtalkradio.com. Starting on Mondays, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Big Al, Mama Mia No Sharia, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Wednesdays, it's me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports, 6 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays, where politics and sports collide, and it's usually not pretty. Fridays, Take No Prisoners with Vito from Conservative Casual Friday, 12 p.m. noon Eastern Time on Fridays. Saturday nights, Minister Usama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. That's 10 p.m. to midnight Saturdays. So right now, Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays are in that flux state. Tuesdays, it's usually Vito or Al if they take it. Thursdays, it would be me doing a hankering, so I don't do them every week. And right now, I just don't plan on it because it's paddling season here in Florida. I'm getting out and paddling a lot. Been seeing the bioluminescence, but also seeing some night launches. Speaking of which, I am hanging out here in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost with my little mini Aussie, adorable mini Aussie. She has not eaten yet today or tonight. She ate this morning, but given the food tonight at 5 o'clock and a little stormage here, so she's not happy. Wife is working diligently over an acoustic Hank land, the former on-air studios of Hank Jones Polysports. In the meantime, we are having storms here, so if I suddenly jump out, it's not that I'm jumping out. It's that storm has taken me out. I don't have all kinds of backup power. It's not like my old office days where I worried about that. I don't worry about that anymore. Lose power, lose power. So if I lose it, I probably won't come back for it. But I don't. It's slowed down now, so I think we're fine. Today's first Internet Laughy is a Facebook meme. It's picture of Willia Thomas being interviewed by ESPN, in which it remarks, "Now that I've conquered women's swimming, I believe my next endeavor will be the paraplegic games. And who knows, after that, maybe the Special Olympics." The thing about that, seriously, you literally could see that. I mean, yeah, the Special Olympics. You could see Leah Thomas doing that, or Will Leah Thomas, whatever you want to call it. It. Can I say it?
Oh, it's true! It's damn true!
Damn right. Welcome, Duck Northwest Media, to the chat room, which reminds me, to access our show, there are several ways. You can, of course, come in via www.blogtalkradio.com. Look at the live button, hit that, go down to the right and look for chatters, and you'll see Global Patriot Radio. Or you can sign in, get an account, it's free. You can sign in as Duck Northwest Media has done, come into the chat room and hang out. You can interact, get into it with fellow posters. Or you can call. That's right, you can call 319-527-6 706. When you do that, you can listen in. And if you hit the one, I'll get a hand up signal that says somebody wants to talk. Now, a note about that. I had one last week. Somebody had their hand up. It was a 111 number, which means it's a Skype. I realize that there are people that call in that way and don't want their number seen. If you're going to do that, I would prefer that you at least get into the chat room and just say, "Hey, Hank, I'm calling in," because we have had those psychos that call in and, you know, want to hear themselves talk dirty on the internet. I don't get it. I don't understand it, but they do it. So if you do that, please, you know, if you're going to call in anonymously, which is fine with me, but at least let me know in the chat room somehow. Or some way, so that I don't, you know, I just don't want to deal with idiots. I talked about Brother Warren in the past. I'm no longer going to talk about Brother Warren. He's doing these things about, you know, lessons for conservatives on how to be racist and stuff. So, yeah, I'm not going to do that anymore. No longer am I going to advocate for him. His free speech rights are his free speech rights. His idiocy is not one that I share. Second internet laughy today, also a Facebook meme. It says, the people telling us not to be offended by a beer can are the same people who are offended by syrup. Ain't that the truth? Totally the truth. Let's get to our obituaries from last week, once I deem significant. Last Wednesday, we lost Canadian film producer and writer Daniel Goldberg at age 74, no cause listed. A few of his credits, Meatballs. I know, some people would say Meatballs. I give him a B-plus for that. It's not a bad movie. It's not a great movie, but it's not a bad one. Stripes gets an instant A-plus from me. It also gets an instant A-plus, I would guess, from Hawkeye Mike, who's listening in. Now, he also did the Hangover series of films, which gets a solid A-minus, maybe even an A, the first one, certainly. Don't know about the next two. Last Friday, we lost actor Nick Benedict after a complication from spinal surgery on his 77th birthday, no less. He mainly did daytime stuff with a few TV movies sprinkled in. His father was actor-director Richard Benedict, who actually had an on-screen credit for the original Ocean's 11. Not the George Clooney version, no. The real one with Frank. Saturday, this is really sad. We lost former Hawkeye football player, offensive lineman Cody Ince, at age 23. He was in the process of planning his wedding for next May, 2024. A lot of outpouring of, you know, memorializing him. Hawkeye head coach Kirk Ferentz, of course, but also this was nice to see former Hawkeye teammate and current Purdue Boilermaker Tyrone Tracy Jr., who said his career was cut short. Oh, no, that's not what Tyrone said. He just had a lot of things that he said about him. But what I was going to say, his career was cut short due to several injuries. He did, however, gain honorable mention All Big Ten during the 2020 season. Very sad. 23 years old. Just, you know, and I've said this before. I met Tyrone Tracy here in Orlando. Great kid. Very, very respect. Let's put it this way. It did not at all shock me to see him say the nice things that he said about Cody Ince. Unlike his Purdue teammate who left Iowa under circumstances I deem sketchy, Tyrone Tracy left above board. He wanted more playing time. He wanted more catches. Frankly, the coaches should have tried a lot harder to keep Tyrone Tracy around because what he got replaced with was a bust. Arlen Bruce, who, for all we know, bet on games, and Keegan Johnson. Although I wish Keegan Johnson would share his miracle cure. He was too injured to play at Iowa. He gets to Kansas State, and he's running full speed in practices right off the bat. Yeah. Anyway, that same day as Cody Ince, we also lost YouTube personality Annabelle Hamm at age 22. Now, she had suffered an epileptic event, it said, but not sure if that was the direct cause. Is it just me? Are we losing way too many young people these days? And frankly, how many received the COVID vaccine? Sorry, I just had to put that out there. How many? You know, how many of it are because of that? I wonder about one of my family members, young family member, 30 something, having some quote unquote circulatory issues, et cetera. And I wonder how much of it has been brought on by the COVID vaccine. And I'm not going to go into it now because it's kind of personal to that person, but I wonder very much if it was the COVID vaccine. Sunday, we lost thoroughbred racehorse Funny Side at age 23. Apparently, the horse suffered from colic, which I guess if unchecked or untreated, obviously can be fatal. Funny Side was actually the first New York bred horse to win the Kentucky Derby and then won at the Preakness. Now, he lost the Triple Crown at the Belmont. He finished third behind two horses that did not run in the Preakness, and this was kind of the start, actually, of those that prompted many to say that horses that skipped the Preakness shouldn't be allowed in the Belmont. Which I, you know, it's an arguable point. Monday we lost Walt Groller at age 92. Now, Walt Groller was considered one of the world's finest polka musicians. I'm not really sure where to go from there, but alas, R.I.P., rest in peace to one of the world's greatest polka musicians, Walt Groller, gone at the age of 92. Still getting lightning events here. Hawkeye Mike sent me something just now. I'm getting the lightning, but that was also Hawkeye Mike. I forgot to put on vibe. Sorry, folks. He says, when an otherwise healthy 23-year-old athlete drops dead, you have to wonder about the COVID vaccine, which can affect the heart in young males. Absolutely. And which is why I wonder about my family member who in his 30s suddenly has these issues, hadn't had them before. And what they're attributing it to and all that stuff. I am convinced. I am convinced that, that it's done a lot more damage than we think. That's just me, though. You know, I don't want to be considered a conspiracy theorist or some kind of kook. Although I am, I guess, because I frankly think this is what's happening. I honestly do. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's premier 24-hour call center and answering service for your medical clinic, service company, hospital clinic, information gathering services, attorneys, property management. Look, they work with remote staff as well as in-house staff. So guess what? If something's happening in their neck of the woods, they can rely on remote staff outside the area. Guess what else? They can be counted on 24/7. If you're one of those companies that doesn't want an office anymore, didn't go back after COVID, whatever, let them be your front line. Look them up, 800-555-3738, or on the interwebs, alliancecommunications.com. Another internet laughy. Only the weakest of males want to physically compete with women. Only the weakest of intellect celebrate them. That one's deceptively brilliant. Only the weakest of males want to physically compete with women. Only the weakest of intellect celebrate them. That's true. That's fact. Getting to the news items, we kind of have to actually watch J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon, D-I-M-O-N, whenever he speaks. Why? Because it's getting harder and harder to tell just which side of his mouth he is actually using as he talks. And I'll tell you what I mean. It's something I picked up from the Western Journal website. So basically, Jamie Dimon, J.P. Morgan Chase CEO. He's a Dem donor. He slams Biden, Bidenomics. He says the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase has his doubts about President Joe Biden's economic policy, which the president has christened Bidenomics. I'd be careful about that, according to CNN. He classified Bidenomics largely as industrial policy, a strategy that specifically encourages or subsidizes particular industries, citing an interview he gave to The Economist. Yeah, it's called the grievance industry. He said he has come around to supporting a form of industrial policy, but only in areas of national security and competitiveness. There shouldn't be social policy around that, he said. It shouldn't be political. It should be purely economic. Dimon said the trillions in spending by the Biden administration is causing inflation, and that if he was in charge of the economy, he would support free enterprise, quote-unquote, growth policies. Goes on to say, I think when they write books about this 10 years from now, a lot is going to be about how it didn't work. bank executive has not been shy about criticizing the Biden administration. Last fall, he panned the administration's student loan forgiveness plan as badly done. He said, "I wish they had targeted the people who actually needed help. They still haven't fixed the underwriting, and they haven't fixed the cost of college." He's absolutely right on that. And said, "We basically put a Band-Aid on, spent a lot of money, and didn't fix the problem, which will now be ongoing." Yep. In March 2022, he met with Biden and urged him to bolster energy security in the U.S. and Europe. He was also among the Wall Street executives who met with Lael Brainard, Biden's top economic advisor, during the shaky times this spring in the banking sector. In 2022, he donated to Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, who was elected as a Democrat but has since become an independent. Much like Sinema, Diamond has carved out a political path that eschews partisan affiliation. He says, "My heart is Democratic, but my brain is kind of Republican." He said that back in 2019. 11 years ago, he said he was barely a Democrat, according to Politico. At the time, he said he was, quote, "disturbed at some of the Democrats' anti-business behavior, the attacks on work ethic and successful people. I think it's very counterproductive." So why would he even, I mean, look, remember, Jamie Dimon told us he would never go through a Fed-induced takeover again, given the grief that the company experienced when they took over Bear Stearns during the 2008 economic crisis. He then convinced 11 banks to deposit 30-some billion with First Republic back in March. Feds then, of course, seized the bank in April. J.P. Morgan Chase swooped in for the takeover for $10.6 billion. Yeah, a bank whose assets were valued at over $220 billion at the end of 2022. So they sweep in and get it for $10.6 billion. And I keep asking, what's going to happen to the money deposited by those other banks? Yeah, but now he's knocking Bidenomics, along with the quote-unquote industrial policy of the greater La Dopey Nostra. He says he's barely a Democrat, that he thinks like a Republican with the heart of a Democrat. In other words, when it comes time for him to run for office, he will, I'm sure, firmly adopt the wet thumb in the wind strategy. You know what I mean, placing his thumb in his mouth, holding it aloft to gauge wind direction, maybe even wind speed. Someone needs to tell this guy, by the way, there are various wind measurement apps that you can get from the Google Play Store. I've got one of them for when I'm out paddling. So yeah, let him know. Yet another global sports body crushing the balls, if you will, of transgender athletes is also from Western Journal. Yeah, I had to throw that in there, ball crushing. Why not? Sounds terrible, but basically, Global Cycling Committee crushes LGBT agenda with ruling on transgender athletes. As transgenderism continues to take its toll on women's sports, one major sporting association is taking a hammer to the LGBT agenda with its latest ruling. On Friday, the Union Cycliste Internationale, the body overseeing the governance of global cycling, announced that at a meeting held on July 5th, the management committee decided to prohibit biological males from competing in women's competitions. From now on, female transgender athletes who have transitioned after male puberty will be prohibited from participating in women's events on the UCI international calendar in all categories in the various disciplines, a statement said. UCI President David Lapartient said that upon taking emerging scientific knowledge of transgenderism into account, it made the decision to protect opportunities for female cyclists. It says UCI has a duty to guarantee, above all, equal opportunities for all competitors in cycling competition. It is this imperative that led the UCI to conclude that, given the current state of scientific knowledge, does not guarantee such equality of opportunity between transgender females and cisgender female participants. It was not possible as a precautionary measure to authorize the former to race in the female categories. In addition, the statement said that the men's competitions would be rebranded to allow athletes who fail to meet the requirements for the women's races to compete against males. The men's category will be renamed men/open, and any athlete who does not meet the conditions for participation in women's events will be admitted without restriction, the statement announced. Goes on to say in this commentary, it is nice to see a major sports association finally acknowledging the biological reality that men and women are physically different, especially in light of all the anecdotal evidence that biological men have an advantage over women in sports. We have seen countless examples of biological men pretending to be women, competing in women's sports, and dominating the competition. This happens at every level from high school to the pros. The most egregious example of this is William Leah Thomas, a biological male who competed as a woman in the NCAA swimming competition, taking honors away from real women. Cycling is no stranger to this phenomenon, as the sport has seen men pretending to be women dominate its women's competitions several times. Unlike other sports associations, however, which seem intent on appeasing the leftist mob, competitive cycling seems to understand that real women do not have a chance against trans women and are taking steps to defend their competitions. And then it goes on to talk about some other stuff that's strictly commentary. I'll tell you what, though. I got a question. It's just one question. Why is puberty even a question here? Seriously, why do they have to say puberty? And puberty's not in question here. One would think transition happening before puberty is child abuse, right? I mean, we're starting to find it. Courts are starting to say that doctors don't have to perform this, that schools can't push this. I mean, why does after puberty even need to be mentioned here? Speaking of nut cases, I know I couldn't resist. American Liberty News reports new twist to history-making Biden officials' airport heists revealed. Sam Brinton made history as the first openly non-binary senior government official employed by the Department of Energy. Sam, who uses they-them pronouns, fell from grace after repeatedly stealing women's luxury luggage from airport baggage carousels. Unearthed expense reports obtained by the Functional Government Initiative, a government watchdog group, found that the baggage thefts occurred while Brinton was traveling on taxpayer-funded business trips. I'm not sure why this is a shock, by the way. FGI shared the internal reports with Fox News, showing in extensive detail how the American public unwittingly funded Brinton's escapes from the scenes of his crimes. I'll tell you what, this is not the shocking part. I mean, of course he's doing it on everyone else's dime. Of course he's doing it on everyone else's dime. That's what these people do. That's what they do. But I ask this, will someone please tell me how this person passed security clearance and became a government official in Pasadena? Because you'll never convince me Sam Brinton wasn't a creep before he became an employee with the Department of Energy. So it begs the question, on what basis was Sam Brinton, a.k.a. the pup handler, brought on at said department? How in screaming hell does someone like this get past round one of employment screenings? Or maybe even worse, is our government so hard up for employees that we are now bringing on certifiable maniacs? Seriously, how did Sam, I mean, you can't tell me that this is like a new compulsion or something. I'm sorry, that just doesn't wash. It just doesn't. Sam Brinton was a creep from the word go. But how did Sam Brinton get through? I mean, I guess at some level, and Hawkeye Mike would know this, obviously. I shouldn't say obviously, but he would know it, I'm sure. At a certain level, these people don't have to be, you know, ratified by the Senate. I mean, certain assignments and appointments have to be, but I don't think something like this would. But I mean, talk about, I mean, it's not crony capitalism per se, but talk about crony political hiring. How did this freak get tired. How? I just don't get it. Here's a spot-on assessment of the recent Senate hearings on the partnership deal between PGA and LIV Golf. It's from Norman Leahy. I think he wrote it for American Liberty, but I will double-check. Both parties poised to furiously virtue signal against corrupt Saudi regime. Congress has a long, regrettable history of staging hearings that do little more than create numerous opportunities for individual members to grandstand before the cameras. Mike says he's not, says probably a civil service hire, not a political appointee. Thank you, sir. So such as was the case with the recent Senate hearings on the merger agreement, and was not a merger, between two major pro golf tours, PGA and Saudi-backed LIV Golf. On the surface, this is about the Saudi regime using its ample checkbook to do a bit of sports washing, buying goodwill through sporting events, cover up for its many manifest and horrifying human rights abuses. As Senator Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut, Democrat from Connecticut, said, a regime that has killed journalists, jailed and tortured dissidents, fostered the war in Yemen, and supported other terrorist activities, including 9/11, it's called sports washing. Fair charges, each and every one. But does the Saudi plan to whitewash its failings really run through the PGA Tour? That's laughable. Handing checks to rich pro golfers isn't going to make the vast majority of Americans suddenly break out in the warm fuzzies for the Saudi royal family. Were Congress genuinely interested in holding Saudi Arabia to account for the litany of wrongs Senator Blumenthal outlined, then it would take precise immediate steps to cut the regime off from U.S. support. La Dopi Nostra, however, is not on board with that idea, and regional concerns about Iran, a traditional Saudi opponent, will very likely keep our government deeply entwined with theirs, which may help explain the mild kerfuffle over the proposed gold golf merger. It's easy. It's discreet. It doesn't involve big geopolitical issues, affect arms sales, or affect the flow of petroleum products across the globe. In other words, it's political theater. Utterly inconsequential and totally beside the point. Yep. In other words, yeah, totally beside the point. But because it's theater, the hearing offers members a chance to look around and sound like hard-boiled realists in search of truth and decency, when the sad fact is most of them were just looking for the nearest microphone. So Mike also points out 95% of federal employees fall into the non-political political appointee category. Says it's almost impossible to fire a civil servant no matter what they do. Okay, now back to this. Exactly. Much like college sports and NIL, Congress, especially those on the left, don't really care about sports in general. Now, most of them, frankly, throw like girls, including some of the female members. What they care about, of course, is virtue signaling. But more importantly, anything to which they see dollar signs attached is fair game for intrusion. That's me speaking. No, they don't care about individual college students. They care even less about college athletes. But when they see athlete A getting $1 million NIL deal, or the Big Ten getting over $1 billion in broadcast rights fees, Congress, especially Big Left, is drawn to it like moths to a light bulb. It's something they can tax or threaten to tax. It's something from which they can extort or over which they can exercise control. Remember Barack Obama and his stupid skin in the game comment years ago? It wasn't about sports, but remember he said, oh, they got no skin in the game. Nobody has less skin in the game than Barack Obama. And yet nobody with so little skin in the game has ever benefited from using it as an extortion tactic to the extent that Barack and Big Mike have. It's quite simple, really. These people go where the dollar signs are. It's that basic, that elemental. In fact, it's a perfect example of Pavlov's dog. Dollar signs are announced. Salivation ensues inside the halls of Congress. Liv and PGA announce a deal. PGA has broadcast rights money. Saudi public investment fund has oil money. For your average congressperson, that's a winning hand at the video poker machine. For your average Democrat congressperson, that's a damn lifetime annuity. That's what their brain is thinking. That's a damn lifetime annuity. Oh, back to the trannies. Apparently, according to an article in American Action News, a consortium of healthcare folks is raising the alarm on transgender treatments. Sound alarm. A multinational consortium of healthcare professionals has voiced deep concerns over the current approach to transgender healthcare in the United States. Their concerns, aired in the Wall Street Journal, draw attention to the lack of robust scientific evidence supporting the administration of hormonal treatments for transgender minors, citing the heightened risk of infertility, lifelong reliance on medication, and potential for remorse. A diverse collection of healthcare professionals hailing from the U.S., the U.K., Sweden, Finland, Norway, France, and Switzerland have voiced their concerns over the excessively politicized state of transgender health care in the United States. Their stance champions a return to strategies that are anchored in science and supported by tangible evidence. The group urges medical societies to prioritize the adherence to meticulously verified evidence-based treatment plans over the tendency to magnify perceived benefits and understate potential risks. Poignant message shared in the Wall Street Journal by this group of 21 professionals conveys their collective dismay, stating, "The politicization of transgender health care in the U.S. is unfortunate." The communication goes on to suggest an antidote to the current landscape, advocating that the way to combat it is for medical societies to align their recommendations with the best available evidence, rather than exaggerating the benefits and minimizing the risks. Systematic reviews, including those published in the Journal of the Endocrine Society, highlight the dearth of high-certainty evidence corroborating the mental health benefits of hormonal treatments for transgender minors. This is contrasted by the significant risks proposed, leading to a rising number of European countries and global professional organizations recommending psychotherapy as the first-line treatment for gender dysphoric youth. Again, though, I'm interrupting here for a second. Again, though, let's get back to where this is happening. This is not happening in the home. It's not happening in the vacuum of, well, it is happening. It's happening in the vacuum of our schools. The scholars also question the widely disseminated notion that gender transition alleviates suicide rates. Comprehensive studies have yet to find definitive evidence in support of this claim. Professionals have also raised awareness of the damage inflicted on many American youths by the politicized endorsement of drugs, hormones, and surgeries for sex change in minors. Highlighting the European approach of prioritizing psychotherapy and reserving hormonal interventions for extreme cases, the consortium argues for a reconsideration of the current U.S. strategy. Their call for a more circumspect, evidence-based approach to transgender healthcare is a salient reminder of the need for less politics and more science in the medical discourse surrounding transgender health. Duh. Of course. However, we need to be careful of the words consortium and expert. Climate hoax and other things have taught us anything. It's that experts are easily made these days, and their expertise is merely for sale to the highest bidder. Consortium is a scary word anymore. People like Fauci have led consortiums. And science. You know, they keep saying, follow the science. And again, when it's science that's actually being followed, sure. Anymore, it's not about following the science with a lot of these people. It's about following the ideology. I mean, it's pretty obvious and self-explanatory that transitioning minors is a recipe for disaster. But, again, like I said in the previous story, follow that cash. Pretty much that. Now, according to an article in the Daily Wire, there's a media mogul who is suggesting actors and Hollywood execs take a 25% pay cut to end both the writers and actors strikes in Hollywood. Former top Hollywood exec has a radical solution for ending multiple union strikes. The writer's strike has been going on for months, but now SAG-AFTRA has joined. The entertainment industry is effectively shut down until an agreement can be reached. Barry Diller, chairman and senior executive of IAC and Expedia Group and former CEO of Paramount Pictures, says that industry executives and top-earning A-list stars should take massive pay cuts in an effort to reach a long-term agreement. There's no trust, Diller said during an interview that aired on Deface the Nation. You have the actors union saying, how dare these 10 people who run these companies earn all this money and won't pay us? While if you look at on the other side, the top 10 actors get paid more than the top 10 executives. I'm not saying either is right. Actually, everybody's probably overpaid at the top end. The one idea I had is to say as a good faith measure, both the executives and the most paid actors should take a 25% pay cut to try and narrow the difference between those who get highly paid and those that don't. Diller also said there would be, quote, devastating effects, unquote, if an agreement wasn't reached by September 1st. Now that actors have joined the strike, TV and movie productions are completely shut down. The former Paramount exec warned that failing to reach an agreement quickly would have long-lasting effects on staff and viewers. What will happen is, if in fact it doesn't get settled until Christmas or so, then next year there's not going to be many programs for anybody to watch, Diller said. So you're going to see subscriptions get pulled, which is going to reduce the revenue of all these movie companies, television companies, the result of which is that there will be no programs. And at just the time the strike is settled that you want to get back up, there won't be enough money. So this actually will have devastating effects if it is not settled soon. Would this mean less money pouring into Democrat coffers? And he goes on to say, the truth is, this is a huge business, both domestically and for world export. These conditions will potentially produce an absolute collapse of an entire industry, he explained. Well, it always amazes me how Big Left is so completely full of people who champion for the have-nots, yet never follow their own advice or ideology, i.e. giving up theirs for the benefit of others. Now, that's a big thing. People were pissed at Richard Gere recently. He went on and on about how Christians should be doing this, giving this up. But he's not giving up anything. He's raising money from others. But these people, they want commoners to pay more taxes. They want conservatives to pay more taxes. They want businesses to pay more taxes. They want businesses to stop making so much profit. They want conservatives to stop striving for independent wealth. They want people not to shop from MyPillow or eat at Chick-fil-A. These people scream about wealth and economic disparity. They champion the economic systems of third world dictatorships. They laud countries with quote-unquote free health care that is paid for with 50 to 75% tax rates. Yet, somehow, only when a strike occurs are we now hearing about the wealth and income disparity within their own little fiefdom. Yeah, don't be surprised when this becomes us versus them and then adds an anti-Semitic twist. Don't be shocked. Seriously, don't be shocked when you hear about actors or producers or directors or writers with anglicized names who were born into Jewish heritage, complete with doxing of their real/birth names. I'm serious. Communism, Nazism, other forms of autocratic worship, and other isms, they always seem to default to anti-Semitism. Because in the end, look, many of them are as prejudiced and bigoted and as elitist as those they accuse of being the same. I mean, it's almost too easy to see how this could play out. Yeah, then again, I totally see George Clooney and Sean Penn forking over parts of their fortunes in the name of equality and equity. I can easily see Susan Sarandon downsizing to a nice but simple condo. Yeah, get real. This will only get solved when they are assured that they can milk consumers for more money at the box office as well as on their monthly cable or satellite or streaming service bills. Yeah, be prepared for the entertainment industry's version of the Universal Service Fund. If you don't know what the Universal Service Fund is, you've been paying into it for over 20 years. It was championed with things like Internet for Schools, better infrastructure for everyone. Those were some of the rallying cries. In other words, just like Obama phones and EBT cards, you've been subsidizing the vote buying via rewarding laziness scheme that Big Left holds oh so dear. You have been paying the Universal Service Fund surtax on every telephone line since about 1996 or 1997. It was ostensibly to bring, quote, access to telecommunications services at reasonable rates, unquote. Note that phone companies did not fight this. They did not fight it. Why? Because they're allowed to retain a portion of it. So yeah, when we start paying and or contributing to some nebulous entertainment access charge, Dopey Joe said he was going to eliminate any and all bogus fees at his last State of the Union address. Ticketmaster, Ticketron, ticket charges, credit card fees, airline fees. We're going to get rid of all the fees. Bet he doesn't fight this one. Look, I'm telling you, you're going to see it. There's going to be some kind of way that they can do this. Because I got news for you. George Clooney ain't giving up a dime. Sean Penn ain't giving up a dime. Susan Sarandon ain't giving up a dime. And you know what? For once, I agree. Why should they? I may not like their views, but they've earned it. Somebody was willing to pay it. It sure as hell isn't Sean Penn's fault that he got this kind of money at all. You may not like Sean Penn. I mean, how can you like an idiot who said upon the death of Hugo Cesar Chavez, America has lost a dear friend? But still, Sean Penn makes the money. His money, he earned it with his work, and I will say he's a good actor. He's a great actor. I like his work. He's a tool, maybe, but I like his work. I even like some of George Clooney's work. And Susan Sarandon, you can't doubt that she is a fantastic actress. She is. I like it or not. I mean, I question the wisdom of anyone who's willing to stand in front of a damn road grader to prove a point. But you can't fault her work, or the quality of her work. All of them, they've earned it. People bitch about musician concert fees and stuff. They earn it. People are willing to pay it. You don't want them to earn it? Don't go to their concerts. You're pissed off at the NFL? Don't go watch Colin Kaepernick, which thankfully you don't have to. You hate your college football coach? Don't go. Don't buy the damn shirt. Doesn't matter to me. Certainly doesn't matter to them, but you know what? As a economic block, we crave it. So next time you see that fee or some surcharge or whatever, it's because we demand it. By the way, does anybody besides me really care if this strike gets solved? Now, I happen to have a friend from college, a dear friend at one time. Person I actually loved a lot, you know, that's in this predicament. And my heart goes out to her for not being able to get work in this case. That sucks. And I think her husband is maybe suffering the same fate. That sucks. I get it. That sucks. But, you know, Barry Diller makes a point too. That, you know, the top are the ones that get paid. Guess what? Tom Brady makes the money. There's a reason for it. He's the quarterback. Michael Jordan made the money. There was a reason for it. He was the best player on the damn floor. Nowadays, it's, you know, well, it's not as much in track and field, but it's the Shaqiri Richardsons and the Fred Curleys and the Noah Lyles that are going to start really making the money. You know why? Because they're the fastest. Ryan Crouser throws the farthest. What's his name? Armand Duplantis pole vaults the highest. The most. It's the way it works. Remember The Godfather Part 2? Hyman Roth is still around because Hyman Roth has always made money for his partners. Simple. In the mob, you don't get killed if you bring the money back. You make the money. Yeah. One of the accused January 6th participants has asked the Supreme Court to hear his challenge of some of the obstruction charges. And should the Supreme Court choose to hear it, don't be surprised if many of these charges go the way of Appalachian in 1957. Okay, for those needing a refresher, 57 Appalachian Gathering was basically a mafia meeting in Appalachian, New York in 1957. It was hosted by a man named Joseph Barbara. He was the boss of what is commonly known as the Pittston family, the Pittstown family, a.k.a. the Northeast Pennsylvania family. That's the family later headed by Russell Bufalino. He was the guy played by Joe Pesci in the Scorsese movie The Irishman, centered in part around the abduction and killing of Jimmy Hoffa. Anyway, at the 1956 Appalachian meeting, a state trooper named Edgar Croswell noted the presence of so many out-of-state license plates at the Joe Barbara estate. He was suspicious of Joe Barbara's claims to legitimate businesses, and he suspected there were organized crime ties. So when the 1957 meeting approached, and that was post-killing of Abbott Anastasia, it was about the drug rules within the mob, but when that meeting approached, he looked into hotel and motel bookings, he looked into rental car bookings, he even looked into orders for large amounts of meat, booze, and other foods that Joe Barbara had ordered from various local purveyors. When lookout guys spotted Edgar Croswell and several local cops posted at various points around the estate of Joe Barbara, they alerted the higher-ups inside of the estate of the possible problem. So mobsters from all over the country took off, some in their cars, most on foot, running through the woods in their silk suits, their shark skin suits, whatever. And many of them were frazzled. Most were apprehended. They told the remarkably similar lie that they stopped in to visit Joe Barbara because they heard he was having some health problems. And they saw all their other friends there, and they decided to make a party of it. Okay, whatever. But when they were questioned by authorities, many refused to answer. Many were later convicted of obstruction, invoking their Fifth Amendment right, or they were held in contempt of court. Almost every charge was later overturned. Now, the publicity put a damper on some of their legitimate businesses, many of them, and ruined the reputations of at least a few more. And no, this is not a defense of the mafia or of organized crime. But many who are accused of crimes from January 6th did nothing beyond walking around inside the Capitol. And guess what? It's on video. Capitol Police and other law enforcement officers there pushed aside the barricades, the doors. Many of them even said, "I don't agree with you, but it is your right." They let them in. In other words, no obstruction was taking place. The only interruption to the electoral vote process was Pelosi and others halting it as if on cue. Look, it was planned, it was orchestrated, it was designed to implicate President Trump as the mastermind of some BLM-style riots. You know, the type of riots that Big Left pretty much orchestrates on a continual basis. But a funny thing happened. Donald Trump never told anyone to riot. In fact, he told attendees to protest peacefully. So yeah, much like Appalachian in 1957, this could backfire on Big Left. Now, let's hope Supreme Court acts lawfully. Let's hope that these sham charges, both of innocent January 6 attendees and President Trump, are frankly, are unceremoniously dumped at the feet of Schumer and Pelosi and Schiff and Dopey Joe and Barack and Big Mike and others. I mean, at a certain point, they're going to start indicting Trump for walking around with Monopoly money. I mean, it's like they just make shit up at this point. Sue from New Mexico tweeted out a story about an American woman arrested in Dubai for screaming at a car rental guy in public. It was from Anthony Brian Logan's YouTube channel. Anthony Brian Logan is a YouTuber, conservative, good guy. Anyway, the story itself is kind of run-of-the-mill stuff, but the point is very clear. You can do what she did in the U.S., whether you're a woman, a man, gay, transgender, minority, doesn't matter. You can yell in public at people. You can argue with car rental guys. You can scream in public. You can, except for in woke America, scream at whoever you want, damn near about whatever you want. But as Anthony Brian Logan points out, a civil rights attorney was pandering on screen, and he points out that this could be Brittany Griner all over again. She isn't in the U.S. She's in Dubai. Now, like it or not, what they do in other countries to U.S. citizens is really none of our affair if they've broken the law. You're on their turf. As Anthony Brian Logan said, they said it best. You're over there. You get what you get. Is interesting is whether or not the State Department will be as gullible for the cause of the sassy trucker as they were for Brittany Griner. Who will we set free? What terror mastermind is destined for freedom? I mean, that's a good question. It's interesting to note, by the way, that in many of her social media posts from Dubai, she was dressed in full garb, almost looking, you know, she wasn't Islamic, but she was dressed fully dressed. She was not dressed in the revealing slutty stuff that she wears on American social media, just saying. I just thought that was interesting to see that. The Reverend Jesse Jackson is retiring as president of the Rainbow Push Coalition due to health issues. He said, though, that he is stepping down from his duties at Rainbow Push, not stepping aside from his fight for equality and justice. I suspect as well that he will continue his schemes to extort and blackmail American companies that can either afford to be woke or are simply afraid they'll be shown as not woke enough. That's his MO. Always wondered, what does that guy live on? What church is he the reverend of? You know, that's always asked. Does he live on? People used to ask, what does he live on? Vito told me one time, long phone conversation, he said he's basically extortionist. He extorts American companies with threats of, you know, racism accusations. It's what he's done. I'm going to take a quick break, but I'm going to play. I featured the Fleetwood Mac guitarist, but one song I did not get to. It's my favorite Fleetwood Mac tune, I guess you'd say post-Kerwin, post-Danny Kerwin and Peter Green. A great tune featuring Bob Welch on vocals and rhythm and acoustic guitars, and Bob Weston on lead guitar. It's a great song. I hate to say that I used to get stoned to this song back in high school and college. Great song. It's called Hypnotize. Be back in about 4.5 minutes.
Yes, the same kind of story friends having coffee together when something flies by their window. It might be out on that lawn, which is wide at least half of the playing field. Because there's no explaining what your imagination can make you see and feel. When your body's not made, you know you're hypnotized. It's not a meaningless question to ask if they've been and gone. I remember a talk about North Carolina in a strange, strange pond. You see, the sides were like glass in the thick of a forest without a road. And if any man's hand ever made that land, then I think it would have showed. And that's why it seems like rain. They got me hypnotized. And I know that's right.
We are back on Hank Jones Poly Sports. Our call-in number is 319-527-6706. That, of course, was early Fleetwood Mac from the Mystery to Me album, Hypnotized. When I say early, middle Fleetwood Mac. It was post-Peter Green and Danny Kirwan, pre-Lindsey Buckingham, Stevie Nicks, Christine McVie in the background, vocals, Bob Weston on lead guitar. Those were two of the last great guitarists who are no longer here from Fleetwood Mac. Some more on the Northwestern Pat Fitzgerald fallout. There are now at least four decommits for their 2024 recruiting class. One has already committed to Wisconsin. There's now a lawsuit filed anonymously somehow. I should have asked Mike about this because I don't understand this. It's been filed against the university, which also names the president and Pat Fitzgerald as dependents. Now, this, by the way, I think is a bogus lawsuit. I think several have joined it at the request of the school to try and bolster their assertion that Pat Fitzgerald was terminated with cause. I think they screwed that up. I think they've already screwed it up. I think this is just a bogus lawsuit to try and manipulate that. But I should have asked Mike beforehand. He's listening. I think he's on the phone, but I'm not sure if he's actually actively listening or if he's just kind of filling time. But how you file a lawsuit anonymously, I don't know how that happens. It's a former player who literally didn't get playing time, entered the transfer portal, was all mad. The player who, when started the season as number three, but when their first two players at that position went down, they went to a walk-on before they went to this player who evidently did not have the confidence of Coach Pat Fitzgerald or his position coach or his coordinator. There continues to be speculation that various facilities will be delayed, if not outright abandoned. In fact, more than 250 faculty members have signed on a letter demanding greater transparency and calling for a halt to some of said projects, including the upgrades for the football stadium. The likes of ESPN, along with other pseudo-woke media outlets, are giving all kinds of advice on where Northwestern went wrong and just how they can right the ship. I know, that's kind of hilarious. That's the same ESPN that just laid off a boatload of on-air talent that they can no longer afford. The Big Ten itself is silent on the matter. On the other hand, that's probably why the Big Ten, in many ways, is still the best overall conference in the country. They don't wear wokeness on their sleeve. They don't shy away from real, actual issues, but in this case, the only issue is an internal one, dealing with a firing or an unjustified firing or whatever. But it's not a matter for the Big Ten. It's a matter for Northwestern and probably the courts. Also, at least one Northwestern associate athletic director has resigned. Fan sites, social media show remarkable support for Pat Fitzgerald, although there is the camp of those who felt he needed to go based on recent performance, i.e. two consecutive bad years. I mean, look, it's standard to see SEC coaches fired 2 years after winning a conference title or a national championship. It's a lot less common in the Big Ten. I mean, we're talking about a guy in the 2020 season who was the Big Ten West representative at the Big Ten Championship. And 2 years before that, 2018, they were also the Big Ten West representative at the Big Ten Championship. Now, it appears that that a member of the squad is being held at a distance by at least 40 Democrats. Comments about Israel. This is a story from Fox News. Fox News is like the schizophrenic of media outlets. I mean, they literally go back and forth from, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Anyway, 43 Democrat lawmakers have reinforced their support of the ironclad U.S.-Israel relationship. More than 40 House Democrats released a statement Monday night distancing themselves from fellow Democrat Rep. Pramila Jayapal after she called Israel, quote, a racist state. The Democrat from Washington has since walked back her comments, but members from both sides have criticized them. Josh Gottheimer, Democrat from New Jersey, began circulating the letter Monday morning, which underscored the historic relationship between the U.S. and Israel. He got signatures from 42 other members before it was released to the public. He says, Israel is the legitimate homeland of the Jewish people, and efforts to delegitimize and demonize it are not only dangerous and anti-Semitic, but they also undermine America's national security, in the letter from the Dems. Israel is critical to our fight against terror, and our defense and intelligence collaboration continues to strengthen our leadership in the world. Israel remains our greatest partner for peace in the Middle East. They added, any efforts to rewrite history and question the Jewish state's right to exist or our historic bipartisan relationship will never succeed in Congress. We remain committed to peace between Israel and the Palestinians, to establish two states that exist side by side in peace, prosperity, and mutual security. By the way, that's not exactly true. When the U.S. signed off on the support of a Jewish state, it said nothing about a two-state solution. The letter specifically mentioned Jayapal by name, unlike a letter released by House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and others that expressed a support for Israel. Deeply concerned about Representative Pramila Jayapal's unacceptable comments regarding our historic democratic ally Israel, and we appreciate her retraction, the lawmakers added. Says Israel remains the only vibrant, progressive, and inclusive democracy in the region, and I am tired of hearing about democracy. It's weak. The U.S. is not formed as a democracy. Arab parties serve in the Knesset. That's true. Women serve at the highest levels of the military. That's true. And the country remains an oasis for LGBTQ plus people in the region, in a region hostile toward the community. Pluralism flourishes in Israel. The letter continued, we will never allow anti-Zionist voices that embolden anti-Semitism to undermine and disrupt the strongly bipartisan consensus supporting the U.S.-Israel relationship that has existed for decades. Yeah, I don't get that. Israel is not a racist state at all. Others that signed it, Jimmy Panetta, Jim Costa, Salud Carbajal, Grace Napolitano, Brad Sherman, Lou Correa, Mike Levin, Scott Peters, Juan Vargas, Darren Soto, Kathy Castor, Sheila Cherifalis McCormick, Jared Moskowitz, Frederica Wilson, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Ed Case, Brad Schneider, Seth Moulton, Dutch Ruppersberger, David Trone, Jared Golden, Hillary Schultens, Haley Stevens, Angie Craig, Dean Phillips, Don Davis, Kathy Manning, Wiley Nickel, Jeff Jackson, Chris Pappas, Annie Kuster, Don Norcross, Rob Menendez, Susie Lee, Dan Goldman, Greg Landsman, Henry Cuellar, Mark Vasey, Abigail Spanberger, Marie Glusenkamp Perez, Derek Kilmer, and Marilyn Strickland. Jayapal, who heads the Congressional Progressive Caucus, called Israel a racist state during an appearance Saturday at the Netroots Nation Conference in Chicago. Here's what she said during a panel discussion. As somebody who's been in the streets and participated in a lot of demonstrations, I want you to know that we have been fighting to make it clear that Israel is a racist state, that the Palestinian people deserve self-determination and autonomy, that the dream of a two-state solution is slipping away from us, that it does not even feel possible. Yeah, you know why it doesn't feel possible? Because the Arabs don't want a two-state solution. They want Israel right wiped off the map. On Sunday, she released a statement on Twitter that attempted to clarify her stance. She, quote, does not believe the idea of Israel as a nation is racist, but accused Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of pushing outright racist policies. Yeah, when in doubt, go after the conservative. Words do matter, and so it is important that I clarify my statement. Funny the comments. One person said, so 182 other Democrats either agree with it or are too scared to say anything. And if your representative in Congress won't speak up, they don't belong there. Wow. I mean, it doesn't get much more racist than her statement. Some social media chatter. Aretha asks on Twitter, will Biden step down so Harris can pardon him? It's a damn good question. Here's one from the woman who goes by the handle That Girl. This is really good. Proponents of gender ideology claim that a person's genitals don't determine their gender. If that's true, why then is genital altering surgery necessary to affirm one's gender? Damn good question. It's a fantastic question. Meantime, this next story comes complete with a song. And you don't hear this song on here ever because it's not a great guitarist who's no longer here. It's a great guitarist who is still here. But here is the feature song for this story. She don't lie, cocaine. Yeah, so a story in the Gateway Pundit tells us that the Secret Service blew up the cocaine controversy, so to speak. So this is by Christine Layla of the Gateway Pundit, run by Jim and Joe Hoff, started by Jim Hoff. Gentleman I met in college, and I believe Hawkeye Mike knows. A GOP congressman said that the Secret Service blew up the cocaine and destroyed DNA evidence. The Secret Service closed its investigation into the Biden White House cocaine scandal without conducting any interviews. The Secret Service concluded last Thursday its investigation into the cocaine scandal. No suspect was identified, and the Secret Service didn't interview any of the more than 500 potential culprits. It was a sham investigation. Former Secret Service agent Dan Bongino said he spoke to some of his former colleagues in the Secret Service, and they are absolutely furious about the agency's cocaine, quote, investigation, unquote. This is embarrassing. They know exactly who it was, according to Bongino. There's more. Congressman Tim Burchett of Tennessee said the Secret Service destroyed all the DNA evidence after they blew up the baggie of cocaine. Because apparently when they went and got the bag, they treated it as a biological entity and for some reason destroyed it, because to me it just seems like they would go in there with the hazmat suits on, put a protective bag, take it to a lab for analysis, but instead apparently they blew the thing up. It's a complete joke and a nightmare. Nothing to see here. Move along. You know, it does make you wonder. I mean, how is it that there's all this? I mean, all the they can pick out people who have left Washington and headed back to wherever, Idaho, Florida, Texas, Illinois. It doesn't matter. They can pick your face out of a film and arrest you and bring you back to Washington for a January 6th hearing. Or arrest. And yet somehow they don't have any video of how this got there. No audio or video surveillance. It's incredible. I mean, it really is. Think about that. Think about that just for a second. We literally have cocaine found in the White House. And somehow they don't know whose it was. Or they don't want us to know, obviously. I mean, given all the proclivities of Hunter Biden, be a natural direction you might take. Now, if it were someone else, if it were a White House staffer or a family member of a White House staffer, I think we'd have heard about it. I think we'd know right away. I mean, this administration isn't even trying to pretend that there's anything normal going on in Washington right now that is untoward. I mean, it's like they don't even try to hide it anymore. Now, look, in the grand scheme of things, it's a bag of cocaine. I get it. It's not a gun. It's not a bunch of cash, although there's probably a bunch of... Look, this is a drug deal, probably. Gord or Hunter was selling or somebody else, you know, probably what it was. I mean, it's Hunter's, probably Hunter's coke or some other family members. But seriously, the evidence is gone? I mean, that's not even trying. Meanwhile, we're dragging up banana peels from January 6th in order to trip people up. We're literally looking at film footage from January 6th of 2021, grainy-ass film footage, and picking up people out of digital lineups and arresting them and putting them in jail. And in some cases, not charging them right away or not providing them attorneys. We're providing them attorneys who are not interested in providing a defense. It's unbelievable. Yeah, we have cocaine in the White House, and nobody knows where it came from. Good Lord. Good Lord. How has it come to this? I mean, you know, people were saying Banana Republic for a while, and I was like, yeah, we're not there yet. We're there. We're there. We're clearly there. I mean, the only thing missing is Dopey Joe wearing a uniform of a Noriega or someone like that, or Daniel Ortega wearing a military uniform. That's the only thing we're missing. I mean, they're literally going after political opponents. The IRS whistleblowers testified today. That takes balls, by the way. Because there's no protective custody that'll protect that person. If Barack and Big Mike and Dopey Joe have their way. I asked Vito and Al a couple weeks ago or last week on the show, do they think Dr. Jill has porked Kamala's husband? I'm starting to wonder about the whole thing. It's like, I never, when people used to say Michelle Obama was really a man and all that, I used to, wow, come on. But after seeing stuff and the way they're trying to normalize the whole trans ideology, I buy it. Not saying I have any concrete proof, even the picture of her with shoulders that would make Jack Campbell jealous. Even after that, that's not what I'm basing it on. I'm just saying the way they are so working so hard to normalize trans ideology, well, what's one way? What's one reason they would do that? Because they care so much about trans people? Of course not. Most of them don't. Most of them don't give a crap. But if Big Mike, if Michelle was originally Big Mike, that'll come out. At some point, somebody will blow the lid on that. And thus ends the presidential dream. Unless, of course, it's normal. If everybody sees it as normal. You know, it's literally what's happening. That's what's happening in our banana republic. Okay, so we have been doing our monthly series on great guitarists who are no longer here. For January, of course, we did Jeff Beck upon the news of his death. February, we did... Born in Sioux City, Tommy Bolin, played with the James Gang, played with Deep Purple, and of course had released a couple albums on his own, and his last gig, believe it or not, was warming up for Jeff Beck. March, we did Chicago's Terry Kath, fantastic guitarist from my neck of the woods. And then April, of course, which we took through May as well, into June, we did George Harrison and John Lennon. What more can I say about those two? I literally, you know, people say, talk about, like I said back, people talk about how Lennon got weird and did this. At the age of 30, literally at the age of 30, the guy has done it all at that point. What's left for him to do other than experiment and do some weird stuff? I mean, what's the point of him writing normal songs or doing, I mean, geez, they literally had not, I mean, things that we take for granted in the music industry now, those guys were literally inventing the concept of. So, yeah, I mean, George Harrison could have walked away after his first – I mean, his real first – he'd done two other things, but he could have walked away after All Things Must Pass. He certainly could have walked away after Living in the Material World, but continued to record. Lennon didn't have to do anything, and he was still going to be John Lennon. Same was, to a lesser degree, Paul McCartney. But in the early stages, it was Ringo and George that were more prolific. In June, of course, we talked about the early guitarists of Fleetwood Mac: Peter Green, Danny Kirwan, Bob Welch, and Bob Weston. So July, who for July? Who is my July into August guitarist? This was a tough one because I really think of him more for his prolific songwriting as well as his showmanship. But this guy could flat out play. And we will hear it over the next few weeks, beginning next Wednesday. So this month's guitarist in our Great Guitarists Who Are No Longer Here series will be Prince. Yes, Prince, who at one point people said just looks like Michael Jackson and dances around. We later discovered Prince is one hell of a songwriter, one hell of a showman, but one hell of a guitarist as well. So that's what we're going to start listening to a little bit next week. Meanwhile, Duck has pointed out Taylor Swift, Seattle concert preparations are underway. Duck, are you a Taylor Swift fan? Say it ain't so. Now, my daughter actually went. But, Duck, I don't peg you as a Taylor Swift fan. I really don't. Let's hope this was a joke, maybe. I don't even know. But, yeah, I'm not a Taylor Swift fan, although somebody pointed out when she was still country, they liked her. But, yeah, nowadays, who knows what, you know, all that music is being blown into, they're trying to blow it into one single category. It doesn't work. That's why, you know what, I used to think, I'm never going to pay for Sirius XM. When it's free, when you first get your car, now I can't live without it. I mean, frankly, I listen to some of my sports games on there when I don't feel like driving to a sports bar. I'm not going to pay for live TV if I don't need it. I will at some point in any given season, but until I really essentially need it, I won't pay for it. So I use SiriusXM to listen to some of my Hawkeye games, but yeah, for music, classic vinyl channel, classic rewind channel, deep tracks, the Beatles channel alone is worth it. Chris Carter does a series on there Monday through Friday called Breakfast with the Beatles. What it's outstanding. I mean, outstanding. He's done all kinds of themes, and he doesn't rehash stuff. I mean, he literally just stays original. Some of the jazz channels are fantastic. So yeah, that's why I keep it, because it reminds you that real music is still out there. Hell, they got a Sinatra channel that is just amazing. Great stuff. So anyway, next week we're going to start in resume our series with music, the guitar playing of Prince. Big Ten Media Days, I think, are a couple days. I think starting next Monday and Tuesday. I better double check that, but that's coming up. You know, we could be hearing some more stuff out of Congress. Something's going to have to happen with the student loan stuff. I mean, the Supreme Court basically smacked Joe Biden's administration down, and they still announce stuff. I don't know if there's such a thing as contempt in the Supreme Court, and then, again, that's something Mike could answer on a future show. But, my God, this just seems like they're just total disregard for a Supreme Court decision. Unbelievable. I've never seen it in my lifetime. I mean, again, Mike could refresh me. There must be some other Democrat president has to have done it at some point. But in my recollection, nobody has outright just defied a Supreme Court decision by saying, we're going to do this anyway. It's unbelievable. And it's got to stay. Again, it comes back to us. We cannot let this continue to happen. You know, people are saying it's up to us. It's up to us. That's right. It's damn right. It's up to us. If we're waiting around for a Republican majority, even if it comes about, Republican White House, so what? They couldn't get Obamacare reversed. Why? because of people like John McCain. Frankly, because of John McCain. So no, don't depend on 535 people in Washington to do the right thing at all. Don't depend on a bunch of bureaucrats to do the right. Don't depend on a government employee who's in a union. Who does that government employee vote for? The person who protects the union. Like I said, why does a government employee, a group of government employees, why do they need a union? It's a repulsive thought. Absolutely repulsive thought. In the meantime, folks, that's it for this week. I want to thank Duck for being here and somebody else. There was another person here earlier, Jay Clark's Novelty Vent and Chat Late Nights, who came in and said good show that did some kind of weird meme. Hawkeye Mike listening on the phones. Be back Friday at noon for Vito's show. Take No Prisoners and Conservative Casual Friday. It's a great show. And then Vito and Al are back next Monday. Minister Usama Dakduk this Saturday and the beautiful Christie, revealing the truth about Islam. And then we will be back next Wednesday at 6 o'clock featuring all the stuff that's fit to talk about. Have a good one, folks. God bless. Have a great rest of your week. Have a great weekend. Stay safe this summer and get outside and get active.
Bye-bye.